Now, it's going to be a Valentine's Day like no other this coming Sunday, and we want to hear from you. You might like to tell us how you met your other half, maybe a dating story. What was the first dance at your wedding? What song was played? Where does the Labour Party stand on this? I mean, you've changed tack from last year, haven't you?
Well, look, I think some form of predictive grades, probably going to have to be done, particularly if schools can come back in the next month.
But based on what, you see, because...
Well, it's going to have to be based on some form of assessments or some form of coursework that'll be done over those months, combined with whatever work they can do earlier on from last year and earlier on this year.
But they missed out on so much last year, of course.
Oh, sure, I know that. Yeah. I have spoken at length with Simon Harris, who's the Minister for Higher Education. And I think what would make this a little bit easier, well, actually not a little bit, quite a bit easier, is if we can maximise the flexibility and choice by which students can apply for third level. And I know he's working on an awful lot of stuff there because I have actually put some ideas to him. But I think a combination of all of that, it's not easy. It's impossible for the poor students. It's very difficult for
students. And it's impossible as well to have fair play, isn't it? You know?
Well, look, I suppose anything that can be absolutely rigid here isn't going to work. So there needs to be the greatest amount of flexibility as regards students, the way in which they apply to CO through colleges, flexibility as regards going back if they don't like the course because of circumstances of this year that their FUSI grant isn't affected. Flexibility, I suppose, all around. But in relation to where we're at now, I think, you know, something that needs to be trashed out, it has to be done between the unions and the government, and it has to be done and announced next week. Mm. I agree with the Taoiseach. This can't go on any longer. It's gone on way too long as it is.
Yeah. And what about, I mean, that chaos that was caused by that algorithm last year as well? I mean, have we any idea? Has all that been cleared up? Or
One thing which I would, I'm not criticising overtly anyone here because I think it's such a difficult situation, but one thing I do think should have happened and didn't happen was there should have been some form of assessment of how everything worked last year. That we asked for an independent assessment.
Well, that was promised to us, wasn't it?
Yeah, never happened, Fran.
So that promise of Tuesday having clarity for students like yourself, Jason, you think they'll miss that deadline as well, is that it?
Oh, absolutely. Like, we've been hearing, you know, the word next week for far too long now, and it's getting annoying, to be honest. But hopefully now, you know, we're offered a midterm next week for that week, so hopefully they'll roll off their sleeves and get working on this.
Does the ASTI not have a point, though, when they speak about the plan as outlined by the Minister, Jason, that might see students preparing for two versions of a Leaving Cert at this point?
I do take on board what they have to say and their points, and they are reasonable. But at this stage, you know, we can't sit the Leaving Cert that they want. It's important to, you know, recognise how much time we've missed in the class. It's almost like 5 months if you put it all together. But the two options of predicted grades and the Leaving Cert, in my opinion, I think still can go ahead. Their excuse and their debate matter is that they don't have enough evidence or material to grade us if we do go to predicted grades. Many of my teachers now have said that's pure baloney. You know, like they know a student. We were in school from September to December doing tests every week. We did our Christmas exams. You know, we worked very hard during the fifth year lockdown. So I do think there is enough data and material to mark us on.
The nice thing, though, would be, you know, if you do get back to school, that over the coming few months that you could be graded on your work at that point as well. But if they're also trying to prepare students for the traditional Leaving Cert, it's two different kinds of education, Jason.
Absolutely, and
how did you manage, Jean? Because, of course, once you get up there, which is a job in itself, but then you're competing not only with product in Ireland, but right across the world.
Well, to be honest, Fran, the hardest part of it is the social media. I mean, you can set up your website, but having a website is like having a shop in your back room unless you have a huge social media presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have to have a big social media presence. So it's not good enough just to throw an odd picture up here and there. you need to be constantly on social media.
Mm, you have to and drive people to your site, I guess.
Yeah. You do. You have to drive people to your site. And I suppose for me, that's the most difficult thing.
Right.
Like,
and give us a clue, because I know that businesses will be listening to us this morning, Jean, and they'll be looking for information here. How did you begin to do that?
I suppose I had been posting on Instagram and Facebook.
Edward joins me in line. Good morning to you, Edward.
Good morning, Fran Corey.
How are you, Edward?
I'm great. Wonderful for a man my age. I feel I'm blessed with health.
I'm delighted. And can I ask you what age you are?
I'll be 86 in July.
Well, fair play to you. And you're safe and well anyway, Edward.
Safe and well, and
yeah.
I don't like the virus.
You don't like it? No, no. And no. Are you fearful of it?
No.
No.
No. So
you're getting on with things. Do you have a romantic story for us, Edward?
I do, Fran. It's a story that happened a long time ago.
Well-known matchmaker in the country from Listoon Varna, Willie Daly, joins me now. Willie, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you getting on, Fran? How are you?
Lovely to talk to you, Willie. Do you know, I was just reading some stuff. You are the third generation, are you not?
Matchmaker. Yeah. I inherited the matchmaking with from my father and my grandfather.
You have a romantic story for us as well, Marie.
Oh, I have, Fran.
Yeah.
World Cup 1990.
Wow.
I'm telling you.
So what happened?
Sitting in the local bar with my late mother, and we're watching Ireland versus Romania, the penalty shootout.
Yeah. Welcome back to Tip Today. Now, glad to be joined by our GP, Dr. Pat Harold. Pat, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
Good to talk to you. There's a bit of a change where Shannondock is concerned.
There is. I don't know if it's the most romantic story now you hear this morning, but there is a bit of a marriage going on in Shannondock, because Shannondock is actually located in Nina. I was surprised. It seems to me like it.
Tom joins me now. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Fran.
And
how are you?
Sure, I'm all right, Tom. I'm delighted to be hearing so many romantic stories today. What have you got for us, Tom?
Well, Fran, I tell you, our romantic lifestyle, it finished 2 weeks ago today. Kathleen, my wife, she was buried, she died from COVID.
Oh, my God, Tom, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but our life started out, Fran, in 1958.
Right.
We were both TB patients in Roscrea. Kathleen was from Turles. I was from a place called Cullyhill down near Roscrea, near Clonmore, where you played a few times there for dance.
Yeah.
And I met you there a few times. You remember I told you about the dance that we used to go to in the show hall in Roscrea, where they used to say the rosary halfway through the dance?
Tom, I remember well now.
I remember well.
I do indeed. And a great storyteller you are too.
Yeah.
But tell me, you're both TB patients.
We were both TB patients, Fran. We went in, we were there in 19, we met in 1958. We both had surgery for our lung surgery below in Cork in Glanmire. And we met after that in Roscrea when we came back. I was second back, or she was back before me. And when we were up and about and walking out before we came home, at this stage now we were a year and a half or more, maybe shoving on for 2 years in the hospital at the time. But we hadn't met, you know, the funny thing was we hadn't met until we had the surgery. But anyway, we met Fran, and the little courtship started there. And she came home in October, and I came home in November. And I got a letter from her about a fortnight after coming home to know why wouldn't I go see a friend.
Right.
And it started from there, Fran.
And it started from there. Isn't that just
amazing? Yeah.
And what year did you get married in?
Pardon?
What year did you get married, Tom?
1960, Fran. We were 60 years married last September.
My God.
We married in the cathedral here in Turles on the 12th of September in 1960. And it was on a Monday. And the mass was at 10 o'clock in the morning.
So it was a wedding breakfast, as they used to call it.
It was a wedding breakfast, Jeff, which we had across the road in the old Munster Hotel.
And did you go on a honeymoon, Tom?
We did, Fran, we did. I had a little car called the Little Anglia, the old Anglia. Do you remember them?
I remember them well, yeah.
With the little jut in at the window at the back.
Yeah, the Ford Anglia,
The Ford Anglia, yeah. We had one of them. We went down to Cork, Clare, or Cork, Kerry, Waterford, Wexford, and back home. We were living in Burr at that time. We lived in Burr in the County Offaly. I worked with GAE all my life. I got 41 years with them. I retired in 2001.
And did you have family, Tom?
We had four, Fran, three girls and a boy. And we married, and we had a great life, to be honest. But we danced. I was just saying to your doc there, our dances before we married, friend, used to be in the hall in Cashel.
Oh, yeah, right. In the old, they used to call it the County Ballroom, I think.
The County Ballroom, exactly. I couldn't think of the name of it. And our favourite tune at the time, it was on the go at the time, was Pretty Fraulein.
Oh, my God.
That was it. That was our favourite. Every time she played, it meant something to us.
We had
60 great years, Fran. We'd have been 60 years married. She would have been 89, Fran, next Friday, this day week, if she lived. But she went into hospital with a back injury that she had when she fell, and she contacted COVID somewhere between Limerick Hospital and Nina. Now, I might tell you, Fran, I'm not blaming the hospital in any shape, make or form, because they could not have been better to her. They were absolutely brilliant, and how the nurses and staff stay working in conditions that they're facing, I have no idea, to be honest. Because they're brilliant people. That's all I can say about it.
And were you able to be with her at the end, Tom?
No, Fran, we weren't. Oh, the last time we saw her was on a Thursday night. We were outside at 10 o'clock at night in Nina Hospital looking in the window at her. And that was on a Thursday night, Fran, and she lived until the following Tuesday, and we never saw her after that Thursday night.
That must be heartbreaking, Tom.
I'm not sure, Fran. Look, the only way I can describe it is horrendous. And I wouldn't wish a COVID funeral on anybody. No, and that's been serious about it.
And what happened about the funeral then? Of course, you could only have a few people there.
That's all. There was only 10 at it. Fran, there was, you know, the usual social distancing, no handshakes, no elbows, no nothing. And I will have to say, our undertaker here in Turles, Hugh Ryan, they were brilliant.
Mm,
yeah. The way he operated the whole thing, and he ran the show from start to finish for us, and we had no problem with him. But, Fran, it was unreal. When we took to the graveyard in Turles, the 6 county council workers were there dressed in full PPE. You wouldn't see it in a horror film, Fran.
My God.
Yeah. And they took the coffin out of the hearse, put it down into the grave without prayer or nothing, and it was only then when the little covers were over the grave that the prayers were said.
I can't imagine how difficult that must have been for you, Tom, after 60 years with her. You know?
60 years. We had 60 great years. When we had bad times, and we had good times. We had times when, in the beginning, when we hadn't 2 pennies to be together. But we got by. We, as the saying goes, we were in love with one another. We saw nothing but love, and that was the way it went.
But the few bob was scarce at the beginning, was it?
That was scarce, man. I tell you, only for my late mother and father, we had a farm at home, and we used to often go home when we'd be short of something, and we'd get a loaf of bread, or we'd get a cake of bread, or a bag of potatoes, or 2 carrots and parsnips, and that kept us going for a good while. But then we got going, Fran. We said, well, we were as happy as Larry, both of us.
And how are you getting on since Kathleen passed away? I mean, are you... What?
Well, I have some of the family are around me here, Fran. They call. I have a daughter, Marisa, now. She's living out towards the Rank. I'm living on the road here between Torres and the Jockey. And she calls every day almost. But that's it, Fran. I don't go anywhere. I go down the road to the little shop here for a few messages down to the girls down there if I want something. And my daughter brings me anything I want after that. And the night time is the worst. It's the worst. We're here on my own. And, you know, it's then when you turn the key in the door at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, you know, there's nobody around on yourself then. And that's where it is. It's hard. But to be honest, Fran, it's not as hard as I thought it was going to be honest with you. I don't know why. I have a funny feeling that she's not too far away.
She's probably still looking after you.
She probably is. You know, I've often heard people saying that they do, but, you know, I wasn't a great believer in that until now, but I am now.
Can you remember what she last said to you, Tom? What was her...
The last thing she done, Fran, when we were leaving the hospital that night, I was outside the window. She had a little mobile phone on the inside. I was standing outside the window. And the last thing she do was she blew a kiss to me as we left.
Oh, God. Oh, my.
And that's where it finished, Fran.
God, that's so sad.
Yeah, it is a sad situation. But look, as I said to you, Fran, we had great years and great memories. And I have a great family. And the sad part of it was I have 2 grandchildren in England and I have 2 great-grandchildren there and they couldn't come home.
So they couldn't they couldn't be with you at that time?
No, they couldn't, Fran. That's it, yeah. And they're only waiting for this thing to ease up whenever it'll be to get home. And I'm only waiting for it to finish that I can see him and meet him again.
Well, Tom, I'm looking forward to seeing you and meeting you again, where I can properly express my condolences to you, Tom.
Thanks, friend, and I always enjoyed it. I remember that night. It was in Tranmore.
I remember it well. I remember it. Fitzpatrick's up there.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick, that's right, yeah. And your man there that used to run the dances, Campion was his name, and he used to come in. There were always Kayleys in old time, that time, friend. There was no, there was Kayley in old time, but there were no other, like, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But it was 9 to 1 or so. And at halfway, around half 10, Campion would come in the door. I can't think of his first name, because Bill.
Mm.
He used to walk in the door of the hall. The dance, whenever a dance would finish around that time, he'd walk up the floor, turn around above the stairs, get down on his knees and say the rosary, and every man, Jack and woman and boy in that hall ran down the same thing.
But say the rosary before the dancing could begin. Isn't it just so lovely indeed? Tom,
yeah.
It was a real pleasure to talk to you, and my condolences to you. We're going to hear a little bit of Fraulein now, just to take
Fraulein, you... Fraulein, I'd love to hear it, if you have it. Yeah.
Well, listen, we have it for you. Doc found it for you. Listen, you look after yourself, Tom.
Thanks very much, friend.
Thank you. Good
to talk to you again. God bless. Thanks, friend. Bye-bye. Bye.
At your hand.
What a response to Tom's chat with me. Fran, I could have listened to Tom all day. It goes to show that love conquers all. Fran, what a lovely gentleman you have on the show. Fran, that's a true love story, and blessings to Tom, and may he keep safe. Margaret was on to say, the poor man, Fran, I had a cry with him as my dad passed away at Christmas. What a lovely man. And everybody agreeing with that. Thomas on to say, the interview has knocked me back, Fran. Absolutely heartbreaking. God bless that man and his family. Jackie was on to say, I'm bawling into my coffee, Fran, listening to Tom speaking about losing his beloved wife. You can hear it in his voice, the love they had for each other. The COVID has taken so much from people, the way we say goodbye to our loved ones, the final kiss, or just a simple hello. Did we ever imagine that our lives would be like this? The things we took for granted will never be taken for granted again if we ever see normality. Please pass on my sincere condolences to Tom and his family. What a lovely husband, and I'm sure his wife is looking after him. Somebody else saying she was listening to that man speak so lovingly about his late wife. Sorry, I missed their names. That was Tom and his late wife was Kathleen. But as I light my candle here in West Clare tonight, I will think of the love they shared right up to the end. He can be assured she will always be with him, not just in his thoughts, but more importantly, in his heart. And grief is a result of deep and lasting love. It says, that's a lovely, eloquent text indeed. Phyllis from Nina says, Tom is so positive, if you could bottle what Tom has. And bless his wife, and I'm sure she's very near him, it says here. And Marie was on to us as well to say, Fran, thanks for the great interview with Tom. Well, I played little part in that, I can tell you. It was Tom telling his story that was just absolutely brilliant. And anyway, the compliments go on and on and on for Tom today. All right, let's talk to Johnny Luby. Johnny, good morning.
Fran, how's it going? That was certainly, Fran, your greatest interview.
Do you think so, Johnny? With Tom, Fran, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
He was so down to earth and so realistic about it. You don't remember made of stone. Not to have a bit of sadness for the whole occasion and the way he described it and everything else, you know. And I'd love to meet him sometime. It was something unreal, you know. And I'll tell you, Fran, do you know what he'd have made? I think he worked with CIE. He'd have made a great captain.
Yeah,
because there was no humming and hawing or anything else, and spoke reality and with the great grandchildren in England the way he'd love to see them, and the whole lot of brought back memories for every one of us, you know, and our sympathies to
Tom. Absolutely. What broke my heart was when he told us that she blew him a kiss. That was the final sort of.
Friend, stop the lights.
Yeah, I know. Johnny, cheer us all up and tell us about Valentine's for to begin. You'd be a fierce romantic, I'd say, Johnny.
Oh, Christ, Fran, I think it's the greatest disaster that ever hit the country.
Now, there's the old Johnny back again.
Yeah. I have memories of it. Every time I passed the cattle melting castle, that's where I got my first kiss.
The cattle?
Not from, not from a cow or a bullock.
I was going to ask you.
No, Jesus, no. She's still with me. Now, we were complete amateurs of girls kissing.
Right.
Mother of God, above tonight, we hadn't a bloody clue. I think I kissed her on the cheek, and I don't like the fugitive Richard Kimball. I ran for my life.